Hare Krishna. So we started the 16th chapter today. Long ago we had a presentation in ISKCON Communications about how not to present Krishna consciousness. So there's one devotee who was distributing Bhagavad Gita. And he said, here, take this Bhagavad Gita. He said, you can read the 16th chapter. You will find yourself in it. You will find yourself in the 16th chapter, and in the first three verses you will find me. So this is a very very self-congratulatory way of preaching. You know, it is very alienating. But actually, the divine and demoniac natures are present in both of us. Nadaiva Asura Sampada Vibhaga Yoga. This is called as. So it's interesting, the Sanskrit word is sampada, and Prabhupada in general keeps the English usages simple and conventional. So sampada is not exactly nature. Nature is prakriti. So Prabhupada, the word sampada actually is related with the word sampatti, the same root. So it is not just that these divine and demoniac people have a divine and demoniac nature. Actually, they consider those qualities as their treasures. So, the demoniac people consider lust, anger, arrogance, harshness as treasures. They look forward to increase it more and more. In people who are ungodly, people want to become more and more lusty. People want to become more and more sarcastic. People want to become more and more harsh. So, it's not just the qualities that we have, but also the qualities that we cherish that defines our nature. You know, we may have many ungodly qualities right now, but if our goal is to develop godly qualities, then we are on the right track. So, in the Vedic culture, especially in the bhakti path, where we are is not considered as important as where we are looking. Where we are, somebody might be in tamoguna or beyond tamoguna also. But Prahlad Maharaj says, Svapacham varishtam. Manye tadarpit manovachine hitartha pranam punati sakulam natu bhurimanaha. He says that even a Svapacha is better than a viprad vishadagunati gunyutadarvindanabha. He is better than a Brahmana. Why? Because the Brahmana is turned away from Krishna. On the other hand, the Svapacha is devoted himself to Krishna. So where we are is not as important as where we are looking. And that is the lament of Lochandas Thakur's song also. Gaurapahu. He is saying that, you know, I was right in the next lake, but I stayed thirsty because I never drank from that lake. He's talking about how the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is available, but I didn't get it. So the theme in this chapter, as connected with the previous chapter, is that Krishna is talking about the upper and the lower parts of the upside down banyan tree. And that's why the emphasis in these verses will be jatasya, abhijatasya. You will see in this verse as well as the next verse also. That these people are born with these qualities. Now, born doesn't mean that they are destined to be like that. You know, all of us are products of our past, but we are not prisoners of our past. The difference between the two. We are products means, yes, we have been shaped. If we have had tamasic lives, we might have tamasic tendencies, but we are not prisoners. So that's what this whole chapter will talk about. And it will conclude with Tasma Shastram Pramanamte. So what frees us from our past is Shastra. The Shastric guidance enables us to act in a way by which we become free from our conditionings gradually. So, but Krishna will start with Abhijatasya, that people are born with these kind of qualities. So first, there are the divine qualities. Abhayam sattva samshuddhir, abhayam sattva samshuddhir, jnana yoga vyavasthiti, jnana yoga vyavasthiti, danam damascha yajnascha, danam damascha yajnascha, svadhyayastaparjavam, svadhyayastaparjavam, ahimsa satyamakrodhas, ahimsa satyamakrodhas, tyagah shantirapaishunam, tyagah shantirapaishunam, dayabhuteshvalo luptvam, dayabhuteshvalo luptvam, mardavam rira chapalam, mardavam rira chapalam, तेज क्षमा धृति शौचम अद्रोहो नाति मानिता भवन्ति संपदं दैवीं अभिजातस्य भारता सो भारत दे आर बोर्न विद दिस भवन्ति संपदं दिस आर द दैवी संपत्ति नाउ इट्स इंटरेस्टिंग दैट दीस क्वालिटीज लिस्ट actually refer to all the four ashrams and all the four varanas. So Prabhupada will elaborate that later in the purport. But the point is that even Shudras can be godly. If the Shudras are trying to live according to Dharma, then they are considered godly. Although they are Abhijatasya, they are born in the Shudra family, but if it's not that Shudra birth itself is doomed. Even among Shudras, there can be Shudras who want to go down and Shudras who want to go up. So, Srila Prabhupada explained that Abhayam Satvasham Shuddhi, this is the characteristics of sannyasi. You know, that the sannyasi is very fearless in traveling to all parts of the world and experiencing Krishna's creation and sharing Krishna's wisdom with the world. So, Srila Prabhupada himself is the personification of this, how he went all alone in old age to America. And Narad Muni also, even when he was a small child, at the age of 5, when his mother passed away, he just went through the forest in search of a suitable place for meditation where he will find God. Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi. So, the sannyasi's goal of existence is purification, Sattva Samshuddhi. And one aspect of purification is cultivation of knowledge. Jnana Yoga Vyavasthitihi. Systematically cultivate knowledge. So now, like this, I won't go into all the qualities because that will take a long time here. But we'll focus on the principles. And Prabhupada has elaborated all these qualities very nicely in his purport. So, danam, damascha, yajnascha. So, dana, dama and yajna are qualities for the grahasthas. And swadhyaya, tapa, the characteristics of brahmacharis. This you can read in the purport. The important point here is, everybody, whatever be their ashram, if they cultivate these qualities, then they can become daivi prakriti. Now, it's interesting, you will see there are some contrary qualities. See, achapalam. Achapalam means what? Not having any fickleness. Chapala is same as chanchala. So achapalam is determination. So Prabhupada explains that this achapalam, tejaha, these are qualities of a kshatriya. And in a sense, they contrast with the earlier quality that I described, ahimsa. You know, ahimsa is non-violence. Ahimsa is not a quality for a kshatriya. It is for a brahmana. So let's look at one, two important points in Prabhupada's purports over here. Srila Prabhupada talks about varnashram, and then he describes how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so restrict in avoiding the association of women. And then after that he describes here 2 points. So Prabhupada talks about those who don't want to perform tapasya. The theory that there is no need of austerity in life, that one can go on speculating and everything will be nice, is recommended neither in the Vedic literature nor in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's interesting, Srila Prabhupada categorizes Bhagavad Gita as separate from Vedic literature. He says neither in Vedic literature nor in Bhagavad Gita. So when we say that, is the Bhagavad Gita a Vedic book? Yes and no. See, in terms of technical categories, it is not. If you want to have technical categorization, then the Bhagavad Gita is not exactly a Vedic book. It is not Shruti, it is Smriti. But Vedaishya Sarvairaham Eva Veda, in terms of essential message, actually it gives the same message. So Srila Prabhupada often talks, Bhagavad Gita is a Vedic book, Vedic literature. So even when we present people, we have to recognize the difference between essential similarity and technical categorization. So most of the technical categorization point of view, the Gaudiya literature will not be considered Vedic. It is considered to be Bhakti literature. Bhakti is the conclusion of the Vedas. So in that sense, it is Vedic. That's why in our offenses to the Holy Name, we have Vedic literature and literature in pursuance of the Holy Name. Sorry, in the pursuance of the Vedic version. So, But he's saying that the austerity, that not doing austerity is not recommended anywhere. Because it is only by austerity that there is purification, just as by some sort of discipline a person gets cured. So this is a very systematic purport. And Shaucham means cleanliness not only in mind and body but in one's dealings also. So Prabhupada said this is for the mercantile people. Now, when Srila Prabhupada talks about Natimanita. Natimanita means mana is honor. Natimanita. One should not expect honor. So, you know, in Vedic culture, today there is a propaganda that the Shudras were looked down upon, untouchables were treated as worse than humans. Now, it has definitely happened in some cases, but that was not the Vedic model. The Vedic model is that every living being is respected according to his capacities and his nature. And when the person is in that position, that person becomes satisfied. Because the whole modern focus has always been on how Varnashram created discrimination. But actually, Varnashram not only separated people, it brought people together also. Now, people of the same Varnas would come together very strongly. And basically, there are even before the colonial motives took over in the British government of India, there are many thinkers, many Western visitors who came to India, and they actually searched around, they observed India, and they said that the Indian economy and Indian society is so well structured. So basically, Varnashram provided, the whole system of Varna provided for an extended family. Now, beyond one's own family, one Varna was like an extended family, and people would come together based on the Varna. So, naturally, when one group of people come together, we can look at it two ways. Or, you know, you're getting alienated from others, or you're coming together with others. Just like, say, now as devotees, we come together. Now when there is devotee association, somebody may say, oh, when you become a devotee, you become disconnected from the rest of the world. So by becoming a devotee, you are creating fracture, friction and fracture from society. But that is not the essence. The essence is that there is a larger family, larger community to which we belong. So even the Shudras, they would be satisfied in their position. See, the great problem in modern society is that we have practically the whole world for comparing with. And that is a recipe for dissatisfaction. See, all of us, when we practice, when we do anything, within the social circle that we are in, we want to have a sense of belonging and we want to have a sense of respectability. For example, if I am a brahmachari, then I want to become known as a, say, I want to know if I'm a writer, if I'm a preacher, if I'm a counselor, what am I? I would like to do that service well. And in that circle that I am in, I would like to have a sense of belonging and a sense of respectability. That is, this is not in terms of ego. This is a natural human requirement. We need acceptance. We need to be valued. But when the circle with which we are comparing is not a small circle, but it is the whole world. So for example, today, you know, people see the whole world through the media, through the television, through the movies. And no matter what kind of, say, new car I have, new dress I have, new house I have, you know, I'm comparing with the whole world. So it's like there is a fish and the fish has his own pond. And when the fish becomes big in his own pond, it'll be satisfied. But take that fish, which is quite big in its pond, and put it in the ocean. And there are big sharks and whales in that. And the fish becomes insignificant. So actually the way to be satisfied is to find a small pond and become a big fish in that small pond. On the other hand, if we just try to go into a big ocean and then try to become big in that, no matter how big we become, there will always be somebody bigger than us. You know, if I want to become big, you know, I say I want to become the wealthiest person in my community. Say I am in Marwadi community in Mumbai. Then I think I want to become the wealthiest person in Mumbai. Then I want to become the wealthiest person in Maharashtra. Then the wealthiest person in India. Then the wealthiest person in Asia. Then I want to become the wealthiest person in the world. Then I want to become the wealthiest person in the history of the world. And by that time, I become history. Isn't it? So, what is the? This is an endless quest. So now, why am I talking about this small fish in a big fish in a small pond? The whole Varnashram created small ponds for different communities. So every Varna would be like a pond, and every member of that Varna could strive for respectability within that. And that's why the word Krishna uses is na atimanita. He's not saying na manita, na atimanita. So every person gets a sense of respectability and value in their own community. But when people are comparing, when Shudras start comparing themselves with Brahmanas or Kshatriyas, now they may superficially feel, oh, the Brahmanas are living in luxury, they're not doing hard work like us. But then actually they can't, if they're told to do that, they can't do it because their nature is different. See, when people are not engaged according to their nature, there are two results. One is that they themselves are not satisfied. And when they can't act according to nature, then because they don't feel inspired to do what they are told to do, so they often get into nonsense. So that's why sometimes people from cities, when they go to villages, think, how do you people live without television? How do you live without internet? How do you live without technology? Life must be so boring. But actually, people who live in the cities, their life is, no matter how much technology they have, their life is boring. Why? Because they have disconnected themselves from the realities of life. And when they start living in an artificial way, as I told earlier, the stimulus has to keep becoming higher and higher and higher and higher. The shock, the stimulation. So similarly, when people put themselves in a artificial situation and try to become great in that, there is no end to that. So na ati manita doesn't mean na manita. It means that they had respectability, but it was not that the injunction is that they should not crave for a disproportionate respect according to their nature. So why do people feel bored to a large extent? It is because people are forced to do the things that they don't like to do. You know, most people, they just get into jobs which just pay them more. And then they are not really happy doing those jobs. They would prefer to do something else. And they do that for the sake of work, but that doesn't give them much satisfaction. So they have to get satisfaction somewhere else. And that's why they become so wildly passionate about entertainment and things like that. So these are all qualities which Krishna talks about. Apaishunam means no fault finding. It's a very striking word. Prabhupada translates apaishunam as not just no fault finding. He says aversion to fault finding. Aversion to fault finding means person doesn't have any joy in finding faults. We may still find faults as a duty if we are in a position of teaching someone and we have to guide that person. But one doesn't get any joy in fault finding. To the extent we don't get joy in fault finding, to that extent we are qualified to find faults. To the extent we get joy in fault finding, to that extent we are not qualified. Why is that? Because in a sense, if we see from a spiritual vision, whatever faults a person have, they are all the results of the conditioning of the person. And all conditionings are essentially bhavaroga. So when a doctor is treating a patient, the doctor doesn't get joy in seeing the sickness of the patient. The doctor may have to tell, okay, this is your disease and this is what you have to do for treating. But the doctor doesn't get joy in that. So if the doctor starts delighting in seeing the sickness of the patient, the doctor cannot do his job properly. So similarly, we may have to tell people their faults. And one of the things that happens is if people see that we are delighting in telling their faults, then their false ego also goes into defensive. And then they can't learn from us. So this is apaishunam, very striking. Any questions about this till now? Let's move forward now. Dambho darpo abhimanascha, dambho darpo abhimanascha, krodha parushyam evacha, krodha parushyam evacha, agyanam cha abhijatasya, agyanam cha abhijatasya, partha sampadam asurim, partha sampadam asurim. So, here Krishna is describing the qualities. Dambha, darpa and abhimana. So pride, conceit, arrogance, they all seem similar. There is slight difference between the two. So you remember I explained amanitvam adambhitvam. What is the difference between the two? You remember I discussed that? And still you parade, yeah. So which is dambha is seeking a praise for qualities which you don't have. So that is basically pretense. So dambha, darpa and abhimana. So actually dambha basically refers to showing off, you know, what one doesn't have also. Darpa refers to, okay, I have qualities and I want praise for that. Abhimana means ostentation. I deliberately want to display. That focus is different. In darpa, it's like I want to be praised. In abhiman, I want to parade. Parading and praising, getting praise is the same overall in terms of psychology, but in terms of practical emphasis. Now, there are people who are egoists and there are people who are egotists. What is the difference between egoists and egotists? Ego, yeah? Yeah, egotist, that T means talk. Talk. It is such a person, as soon as you tell them, you know, Prabhu, last time I had such a sickness. Last night I was feeling so sick, I couldn't sleep all night. Oh, you know, 6 years ago I had also had a sickness and whole night I could not sleep. And before you can complete your sentence, that person will speak for 15 minutes about his sickness. So that person's tongue has a perpetual autobiographical mode going on. Everything that starts, the person starts speaking about himself. Just as there is a difference between egoist and egotist, like that there is a difference between darpa and abhimana. And krodha parushyamevacha. So now again, krodha and parushya is the difference of action and speech. Krodha is anger in terms of physical aggression. Parushya is harshness in speech. Parushyamevacha. So a person may be angry in terms of having a short temper, but parushya means the person likes to speak in a cutting way, likes to be sarcastic, likes to be basically harsh. And agyanam cha abhijatasya. So Chanakya Pandit says that one of the qualities of a spiritualist or of even a pandita is what? Atmavat sarvabhutesh. He sees everyone like oneself. So actually, one of the reasons why the demoniac are not sensitive, are not respectful, is because they actually can't connect with others. You know, they don't think of others as human beings only. They think of others basically as objects in their enjoyment. And because of that vision, they just treat them, okay. If I want to treat them harshly, I'll treat them harshly. If I want to use them, I'll use them. So, this attitude, agyanam cha abhijatasya partha sampadam asurim. So, this is the asuri sampada. And when Krishna talks about this, he will elaborate this a little later. So, in three verses, he has talked about the devi sampada. One verse, he has talked about asuri sampada. Now, he will say that. He'll give general characteristics in the next three verses and then he will start describing the Asuri Sampada. Daivi Sampad Vimokshaya, Daivi Sampad Vimokshaya, Nibandhaya Surimata, Nibandhaya Surimata, Mashuchah Sampadam Daivim, Mashuchah Sampadam Daivim, Abhijatosi Pandava, Abhijatosi Pandava. So he has described these two sampada and then immediately described the consequences. Daivi sampad vimokshaya. It will lead to liberation. And nibandhaya asurimata. The asuri sampada will lead to bondage. Now when Arjuna hears this, he becomes anxious. He thinks that I am going to fight a war. And just now Krishna has said that the daivi sampada people are ahimsa. And Kshatriyas, when they fight, they speak harshly, they challenge each other. There is parushya, and generally violence is because of krodha. So I am angry, I am aggressive, so I am an asuri sampada person. And therefore I will become bound. Krishna immediately reassures him, Mahashuchaha sampadam daivim. He says, no, Mahashuchaha. Where does Mahashuchaha come again? 18.66. The same thing. Do not fear. Do not doubt. Do not lament. Sampadam daivim. Actually, your sampada is daivi. Why? Because kshatriya, as per dharma, has to fight on occasions. So when one is acting according to dharma, that is not considered to be asuri, even if that activity involves some violence. Now, after describing this, Krishna will talk about the general principle. Dau bhuta sargau lokesmin, dau bhuta sargau lokesmin, daiva asura eva cha, daiva asura eva cha, daivo vistarasha prokta, o vistarasha prokta, asuram parthame shrunu, asuram parthame shrunu. So, there are these two kinds of living beings, daiva and asura. Now, whereas just now Krishna talked about two kinds somewhere? Yeah, dhamyo purushav loke ksharaschakshar. That is different. They are the bound and the liberated. Here, even the godly and ungodly both are bound only. They are both akshara, but one is on the way to liberation, the other is on the way to further bondage. So it's like that is a meta category, and this is a subcategory within that meta category. So kshara, akshara. Among the kshara, there is daiva and there is asura. Now, if Krishna uses the significant word vistarashaha. Vistarasha means elaborately. So, daivo vistarashaha prokta. So, I have spoken elaborately about daivi prakriti. So, where has he spoken? He has spoken three verses. So, why is it considered elaborate? Yes. He has spoken about the godly qualities repeatedly. Starting from the 9th chapter when he talks about devotees, 10th chapter when he talks about the qualities that emerge from him, then again 12th chapter when he talks about a pure devotee, about those who are dear to him, 13th chapter when he talks about the characteristics of those in knowledge. So all those people are godly people. Daivo vistarashah prokta. So Krishna is not referring just to the three verses that he has spoken earlier. He is speaking about the people, all the earlier references are there. So all those references had specific contexts. Daivo vistarashah prokta. So the character summary of the chapter is 1 to 9 gives qualities. Now there are qualities which lead to activities. Qualities are more of inner features which are more steady. Activities come and go. So lust is a quality, sex is an activity. Like that. So first Krishna will talk about the qualities of the divine and demoniac people. That's 1 to 9. And then 10 to 18, he will talk about their the activities of the demoniac. And then after that, 10 to 18, it will talk that. Then 19 to 22, he talks about the consequences. And in a sense, we could say that the causes of their activities are their qualities. But actually, it is not just their quality, it is their attitudes, it's their worldview. So we'll look about these causes of demoniac activities, and then Krishna will conclude with a choice between the divine and the demoniac. Two verses, yes, Shastram Nimutrujya and Asmat Shastram Pramanam. So this is how this 16th chapter, 24th verses are divided. Right now we're in the first section of talking about the demoniac qualities. We're about to start. So Vistarashah Prokta, Krishna has spoken about all this earlier. Now when he is going to speak about the demoniac, he prefaces that by one more description. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha janana vidurasuraha nashaucham napi chacharo na satyam teshu vidyate. So pravrittim cha nivrittim cha. So what is the normal meaning of the word pravritti and nivritti? Pravritti marga and nivritti marga. What does it mean? Leading towards, leading backwards. Something more? It's true, leading towards and leading. Pravritti basically means, see, main pravritta hua hu. Pravritta means inclination. So pravritti is what is one's inclination according to which one should act. So how the Vedic scriptures work is that here. It's okay. So pravritti refers to two things here. Pravritti is our inner inclination and the corresponding scriptural injunction that guides us for acting according to our inclination. So when we are referring to our inner inclination, ye meri pravritti hai, ye meri pravritti nahi hai. Brahmana will have a sort of scholarly intellectual pravritti. It will not have a money making pravritti. Rajasic pravritti is considered? Yeah, I'll just lobha pravritti rarambha. So I'll explain. Pravritti basically means to do action according to one's nature. So lobha pravritti rarambha means that according to one's nature, one acts. So in general, the pravritti marga, as you talked about, the scriptures of the karma kanda are called as pravritti marga. So pravritti scriptures are concerned with action, and nivritti scriptures are connected with withdrawal from action, and they are referred to the jnana marga. So bhakti is not related with the either pravritti or nivritti. It is actually beyond that, because that is, if we act according to the transcendental principles. So of course, to some extent, the Bhagavatam's description of bhakti is inclined towards nivritti, in the sense that it focuses on Parikshit Maharaj renouncing the world and focusing only on hearing and chanting, and the Bhagavad Gita's description of bhakti focuses on pravritti. So although both talk about bhakti, there's a difference, because the context of the Bhagavad Gita is to inspire the hearer to get into action. The context of the Bhagavatam is to get the hearer out of action. So although both are talking about bhakti, the emphasis of both is different. The emphasis of both is different because the context is different. So bhakti may be the same. Just like somebody just wants to say, I want to chant 64 rounds constantly. And they say, no, that don't do that. You should travel around and preach. And somebody say, now he's become old and has been diagnosed with some fatal disease. And that person says, I want to keep traveling and preaching. He says, no, come to Adham and stay and focus on your chanting. So depending on the context that is there, the same, both are practicing bhakti only. Both are being taught about bhakti only. But depending on the context, some person may be told that you preach and you withdraw. You know, there is that famous pastime of Prabhupada that one devotee told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I am so fallen. And Prabhupada replies to him that, you know, I need many fallen souls like you who can help me to share Krishna consciousness all over the world. So the devotee was saying that, I am so fallen, I cannot preach Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, no, I need fallen souls like you. Another devotee wrote to Prabhupada saying that, Prabhupada, you know, I want to assist you in delivering the whole world. And Prabhupada wrote back, delivering the whole world is good, but first we should deliver ourselves. That the whole letter was about how we should do one sadhana nicely. So, although it's the same spiritual master, but depending on the person's context, a person may give different instructions. So, in every scripture, there is a contextual side and there is an eternal side. So the Bhagavad Gita practically sort of derides the Jnana Marga only. Because Jnana Marga is not to be recommended for Arjuna. On the other hand, I discussed earlier, Uddhava Gita strongly recommends the Jnana Marga. Because the purpose is to get Uddhava to renounce the world. So if you can't, if that idea is, if you can't practice bhakti, at least practice Jnana, but get out of the world. So the context will vary the purpose, so vary the emphasis of the message. So now let me explain this. See, pravritti generally refers to karma marga. And this is to some extent related with the Gita's bhakti. And nivritti refers generally to jnana marga. And this is rather related with Bhagavatam's bhakti. So every scripture has its own flavor of bhakti also. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is not much description of Nagar Sankirtan, chanting and dancing and singing. In Bhagavatam, there is little bit description. CC there is filled with that. So although all of them talking about bhakti, the progression, the emphasis will be different. So now when Lobha Pravrittir Arambha, that refers to when a person in the mode of passion, the person acts for in the karma marga and does karma activities to get the results. That's what it refers to pravritti over here. Now, but here when Krishna uses the word pravritti and nirutti, in general the pravritti is filled with do's. Okay, do this. You are a brahmana, you should do this. You are a kshatriya, you should do this. And don'ts. Jnana marga is about don'ts. No, don't do this. Don't get entangled. Basically, you know, pravritti is related with the mind's. The mind has two primary phases. There is sankalpa and there is vikalpa. Sankalpa means I want to do this, I want to enjoy this. Vikalpa, no, I don't want to do this. So the sankalpa of the mind is expressed in the, is given leeway, given facility in the karma marga. And the vikalpa is given facility in the jnana marga. Now, when Krishna talks here about pravrittim nirvrittincha janana vidura asuraha. So the asuras, they do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. That means that they do not follow scripture. See, this pravritti and nirvritti doesn't refer to one's own nature. If it were referring to one's own nature, then they are simply acting according to their nature only. Their nature is lusty and they are acting according to that nature. So Krishna is not referring to that over here. Krishna is referring to the scriptural injunctions connected with what one should do and what one should not do. Pravrittim cha nirvrittim cha janana na vidura asuraha. They don't know about it, they don't care about it. And na shaucham na pichacharo na satyam deshu vidyate. They don't have cleanliness, they do not have proper behavior, and they do not have truthfulness. So actually, these purports are, from the point of view of today's thinking, politically very incorrect. Now, Prabhupada talks about women's liberation and how it's all of ours, and these were the purports which got our Russian Bhagavad Gita into our Bhagavad Gita into the court case. So in today's context, in today's situation, to say that women are less intelligent or women should not be independent or anything like that is extremely sensitive, and it can lead to a lot of severe reactions. So there was in America, there are these two parties. There are Republicans and there are Democrats. So I think, is it in this purport or the next purport? This purport only. So modern education is artificially devised, a puffed up concept of womanly life, and therefore marriage is practically now an imagination in human society. So Prabhupada is, you know, here talking about, you know, there are two kinds of future predictions. There is utopia and there is dystopia. Utopia is a good future. Dystopia is a bad future. So both are extremes. So for example, the predictions about Kali Yuga, which are there in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam and in other places, they are dystopian. They are talking about a very dark future. On the other hand, the talk about the 10,000 years of golden age, they are utopian. Now, utopian doesn't necessarily mean impractical. It can be impractical. Utopian means that which is a future, some future prediction, future prophecy which is good. Dystopian is that which is bad. So Srila Prabhupada often spoke in terms of extremes to drive home the point. So now, this is not a literally true point. It's not that marriage is an imagination society. Marriage is very much an institution. But Prabhupada is talking about a future that will come, the way the core society is going on, the course that is taking, then marriage is becoming more and more devalued as an institution. And even as compared to 10, 15, 20 years ago, now the whole concept of they're living together. You know, even in legal terminology now, when the people are not asked about their spouse, the word that is used is significant other. Who is your significant other? significant other means the person with whom you are living. Because you may not be married to that person may not also be the opposite sex. So, so they just use the word significant other for that. So, what Srila Prabhupada is telling over here, although it's not happened, Prabhupada is giving a dystopian vision, which can happen if society keeps going the way it is going. So now, puffed up concept of womanly life. And then he said, nor is the moral condition of women very good now. So actually I have a PowerPoint on this. You know, the how the sexual revolution, sex revolution in America became a disaster. And as compared to even 50 to 100 years ago, the condition of women is much worse. Now this is not to say that in the past the condition of women was good. As you, if you contrast it that way, whenever there is a bodily conception of life, there will be exploitation. So if the males are in the bodily conception of life, then they will try to, they are quite likely to abuse women. That has also happened. So when Prabhupada is talking about women, he is not directly essentially condemning the present and simplistically saying we should go back to the past. Actually, even in the past there have been many evils. And in general, the bhakti path has been a path of which has been more inclusive. Krishna himself has said, "Yepi striya vaishyatha shudras yepi se papa yonaya," that even the striyas are included in the bhakti, in the fold of bhakti. Many great saints were females. So here, you know, these sort of statements of Srila Prabhupada, if we don't present them properly, then we will unnecessarily alienate people. You know, as Krishna conscious devotees, we are neither male chauvinists nor feminists. No, we are transcendentalists. But from the cultural point of view, the traditional cultural model was more suitable for the practice of bhakti. And as much as possible, Srila Prabhupada wanted to implement that. But we don't want to get lumped with people who are male chauvinists. That is extremely undesirable. And Srila Prabhupada was actually very practical. In his although he said that the woman should be under the protection of men, and whatever he said, he actually made sure that even the Mataji disciples were happily engaged in devotional service. The most important point is that devotee, anybody, any soul who is coming to Krishna, that soul should be happily engaged in devotional service. So we have to present Krishna consciousness in a way that is inspiring people to come towards Krishna, not pushing them away from Krishna. There is a CC purport. So the point which I am making is, Srila Prabhupada he favored a particular social model that was the traditional Indian social model. But at the same time, he did not insist on that. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes in one CC purport as well as in the Lila Amrit that he says the Western women are very different from the Indian women. You know, they are independent and they can go out and they can preach and they can distribute books and they can open centers. And they are very dynamic. Srila Prabhupada is appreciating their dynamism also. So, the point is, whoever, whatever way they can be engaged in devotional service, they should be encouraged to be engaged in devotional service. And wherever there is a insensitive presentation of Krishna consciousness, at one level, it discourages people, outside people, from coming closer to Krishna. Another level, even devotees become disheartened in the practice of devotional service. You know that story, Prabhupada gave an interview in which there were two reporters, both of them were females. One photographer and one interviewer. And then Prabhupada was saying that women are less intelligent. And then after that, when he said that, it was very inflammatory. And then after that, Vishakha Mataji came to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, you know, the Prabhus are telling us that women are less intelligent because our brain is smaller. So Prabhupada said, when you chant Hare Krishna, your brain becomes big. What does that mean? Now, Prabhupada is talking here, Ravindra Sarupur has given a whole series of lectures on Prabhupada hermeneutics and how to understand Prabhupada's statements and positions. So he says that this happened in his temple only. He was the Philadelphia president. So in Philadelphia only, this was in front of him only. He says, the Prabhupada, when there is a war going on, in a war, whatever weapons work, we may use that. But that doesn't mean that that we have to use those same weapons all the time. So certain weapons may work, certain weapons may not work. So the theory that, say, women's brain is smaller than men's brain, you know, that is an outdated theory. Nowadays, researchers don't support that theory. And it is not that the theory has come from Shastra. Now, Prabhupada, in his Scottish Church College, had a Christian professor who used to talk about the theory, and Prabhupada simply repeated that. So it's not coming from Shastra. So we don't have to emphasize points which are not coming from Shastra, which Srila Prabhupada himself has acquired from incidental sources. So the point here is that na shaucham na pichacharo na satyam teshu vidyate. Na shaucham na pichacharo means that the demons do not know what is the proper standard of behavior. Is the 10,000 year coming from Shastra? Yeah, it is from. Yeah, it is from which from? Golden Age prophecy. It is from the Brahma Vivart Puran. Prophecy of the Golden Age. Yeah, this whole thing is here. I think it's Krishna is speaking to Ganga Devi. Yeah. So that is definitely given in the scriptures. Now, any further question on this? Yeah. Any questions about this? Ashaucha, yeah. Okay, good question. Can Pravritti and Nirutti be extended to other religions? Because in the conversation between Chandkazi and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is a reference to this. See, the Vedic scriptures talk about broad principles that often extend beyond the Vedic scriptures themselves. For example, the difference between Sharir and Atma. That may be taught in the Vedic scriptures and that may not be taught in Bible and Quran so much. But it's a principle that extends beyond. Similarly, the principles of karma, jnana and bhakti. These three are principles that are universal. And they are present in all religions. And Ravindra Sarpur has written a paper about this. And he interestingly says that generally scientists are thought to be as intellectuals. So if you wanted to compare scientists with somebody from the Vedic culture, most people would like to compare scientists with jnanis. But he says, no, the scientists are karmis. Why? Because the principle of karma is control of material nature for the sake of enjoyment. The principle of jnana is detachment from material nature. So scientists, what are they doing? The whole purpose of science is control of material nature so that people can enjoy better. And that's why if we want to correlate karma, jnana and bhakti, karma is the activity, is the whole set of activities by which material nature is controlled so that people can enjoy. So the specifics of how the control is achieved may vary. In the Vedic culture, that may be through karma mimamsa, certain yagyas are performed and the devatas are appeased and by which the material nature is controlled for getting certain things. On the other hand, in modern science, you may just separate out the whole higher dimension and just try to control matter artificially. But that doesn't matter. The method may vary, but the principle remains the same. So, like that, there are rituals even in other religions. By which it is said, okay, you do this ritual, you'll get this. So, these are karma rituals. And in the Quran, relatively speaking, see, if you look at at Christianity and Islam, the difference is that in Christianity, Jesus was more Brahminical and Saint Paul was more of a Kshatriya. Jesus gave just teachings and he preached. But Jesus never sort of did any organization, any structure, any system. But Saint Paul did the whole thing. And Saint Paul is the person who spread Christianity far and wide. And the most of the Bible is actually the instructions of Saint Paul to various groups of Christians. And of course, Saint Paul was a person who was, Paul was initially a person who was opposed to Jesus. and he never met Jesus. And he was a persecutor of Christians. He was a Roman who was initially persecuting Christians. He was an administrator from Rome, and he was persecuting Christians. But after Jesus was crucified, and when he was continuing his persecution, he apparently had some miraculous vision. Temporarily became blind, and he saw Jesus, and then he got back his eyes, and he became converted to Christianity after that. And then he propagated Christianity. Now, some people say that he did not propagate Christianity, he propagated his own ideas in the name of Christianity. Others say that he propagated Christianity. But the point here is that, you know, there was a division of the Brahmana and the Kshatriya. So, on the other hand, in Islam, Muhammad was supposed to play both the roles. Muhammad was the Brahmin who got the revelation of the Quran, and Muhammad was also the warrior who went around conquering. So now, if you look at the people around Muhammad, most of them were of the Kshatriya nature. Not Kshatriya in terms of guna necessarily, but in terms of karma. They were all warriors. And to a large extent, from Muhammad's example, his associates took primarily the Kshatriya side and far less the Brahmana side. And that's why within the Quran, the context of the Quran was also people who were warriors, who were had to be taught. And from his teachings also the Kshatriya ethics are taken more. And the Kshatriya ethics are ethics of action, of aggression, of violence, of domination, of control. Ishwara Bhava. So that's why Islam today is largely a search for political power in the garb of religion. And in fact, the idea is not that Islam is not spiritual. There are spiritual aspects in Islam. But Islam, as it has come down historically, has largely been this search for political power. And the whole idea is that the more political power one acquires, the more successful Muslim one is considered to be. Because that was Muhammad's standard of success also. The more he conquered the kingdom, the more Islam was spreading. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells over there to Chand Kazi is that actually even in your scripture there is pravritti and nivritti. But your teachers don't know about nivritti so much, they focus only on pravritti. And then he says that even in our scriptures there is a gomedha yajna, but that is very much under restriction. It is only in the context of yajna. So the pravritti and nivritti are broad categories which apply to all religions. Okay? Any other questions? Okay, Sankalpa and Vikalpa. Vikalpa basically means alternative. Sankalpa means I decide to do this, I give it up and I take up something else. So, in a sense, for most people, the Vikalpa is also another Sankalpa only. The Vikalpa is just another form of sense gratification. Another form of sense gratification. They may give up this. You are watching TV and you find that India loses the cricket match. So what do? Change the channel and watch some other TV. Some other channel on the TV. So, what the alternative is also a form of material enjoyment. But in general, when it talks about from philosophical perspective, when one gets fed up with sankalpa, then the vikalpa is that one gives up material enjoyment and seeks something else. So, here sankalpa and vikalpa are like bhoga and tyaga. When one gets into bhoga and when one gives it up, then one goes towards tyaga. No, I don't want all this. But then neither of them is stable. After tyag, one will come back to bhoga. It's like bhoga is one side of the pendulum, tyag is another side of the pendulum. One just keeps oscillating. So bhakti is the steady stage. Clear? Anything else? Yeah, so what I meant by it is Bhagavatam's bhakti, I said, the Bhagavatam is talking more on disentanglement from the material world. Both for Parikshit Maharaj, for Sukadeva Goswami. It's focusing more on it's not exactly identical, but it is similar. So we will continue the remaining verses in the evening. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Shila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vinda ki jai. Tai Gaur Premanandi.